It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here as we examine a common way of fixing sewer pipes in our country and the potential effects on human health with noxious fumes. Call in with your questions and concerns about what are called cured-in-place pipe repair projects. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Andrew Welton is a professor of civil engineering and environmental and ecological engineering at Purdue University, studying the risks of these repair techniques. Andrew, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me.
You've been sounding the alarm bells on this method for over a decade now. We've recently seen a report in USA Today chronicling incidents of people getting sick, including in 2021 at a middle school in Spooner, Wisconsin. Can you explain how cured-in-place pipelining works?
Absolutely. It's an innovative technology where pipes that are buried beneath the ground are fixed in place without having to dig them up and shut down roads. But one of the issues, which is really central to the technology, is that you soak a sock in resin or raw chemical, you slide it into the pipe, and then you cook it. The problem is the waste is not captured. It's often just blown directly into environment and into nearby buildings, which is what happened, I believe, in Spooner, Wisconsin.
And so you say this is innovative, but hasn't it been around, this technique, for decades?
It has. It came in the 1970s into the U.S., but once a patent expired for a company called Insigiform Technologies, a lot of different companies started forming to do this technique as well. And so as the infrastructure needs repaired, this is a relatively inexpensive, quick process that a lot of people see an opportunity to make money from.
Is the resin formula, the resin recipe, if you will, is that standardized? Or are there a lot of different types of ways that you can cure pipes with different various resin recipes?
So that's a great question. Initially, when we started getting involved 10 years ago, the industry said that there's really only one or two different types of resins. But it turns out there's been over 20 different types of resins used, and each of them have different chemistries or different chemicals in them. When you cook the resins and you transform them from a liquid to a plastic, a hard plastic, you can either use UV light, steam, hot water, or you can just let it cook itself in the ambient air.
And so when we see steam rising up from a sewer hole, you can that suggests that this technique is being used.
Well, I would first caution you and all your listeners that what's coming out of the sewer hole isn't steam when this technology is used. We figured that out in 2017. That is nothing like a shower that you would, you know, take a steam shower in. That is raw liquid droplets of pure chemical, particulates, wax, microplastics, and nanoplastics coming out. So I would avoid going near that waste emission.
Why is this technique risky for human health? What is in that concoction of organic compounds that is hurting human health?
Well, it turns out that many of the workers and even the company owners that bought the technology didn't really understand what types of chemicals that they were handling and discharging into the environment and nearby buildings. The chemicals that have gotten the most discussion are styrene, which is a probable carcinogen. It can be acutely toxic if you're exposed to it, especially for children and immunocompromised people. But there's a whole host of other chemicals in that emission, such as methylene chloride, sometimes benzene, sometimes other chemicals, which are known to cause, you know, immediate health impacts.
We're talking about the risks with a commonly used form of pipe repair with Andrew Welton, professor and director of the Healthy Plumbing Consortium at Purdue University. You can join in with your questions, your comments on this type of cured-in-place pipe lining, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Andrew, explain the upsides here, the advantages for this type of pipe repair. I would imagine it's way more cost-effective than digging up a pipe and replacing it.
Absolutely. So this technology can be about 80% less expensive than digging up a pipe. And so when officials are challenged with a limited budget and they can replace 80 miles of pipe or 20 miles of pipe, they'd prefer the 80 miles. The challenge here is just the waste emission. And there are ways to capture or just minimize the amount of waste you're producing. But right now, the cheapest approach for using this technology, which is what everybody generally pursues, is the one where the waste is blown into the environment in nearby buildings.
In 2017, you said this method is used in about half of pipe repairs in our country. Is that statistic still holding up?
I think it's probably used in potentially every county across the country. We've seen ebbs and flows with regards to how popular it is. But I would say that, yes, it is the most common pipe repair placement technology in the United States.
And then the other option, though, is to just dig up and replace the pipe and repair it that way? Or are there other ways that you can do this?
So the excavation approach, where you dig up a broken pipe and you install a new pipe, is what is often compared against for CIPP technology. And that is costly, that shuts down roadways, people are out of sewer or water service for days, sometimes weeks. There are other technologies that you can use. There's one called slip lining, where you slide a smaller plastic pipe that's already formed inside the existing pipe. And there's another technologies as well, but CIPP is the least expensive, generally fastest way to repair pipes in place.
You know, I'm thinking about that there are poisonous lead pipes. There are lead laterals that are being replaced in cities all around the country, including here in Wisconsin. Is this method used for that type of repair?
It actually is. Less than 1%, though, of all drinking water pipes are being replaced using CIPP. And that's primarily because many of the approaches or pilot projects weren't successful. And so the industry is trying to figure out how to successfully use this on a larger scale for drinking water pipes, but it really hasn't caught on yet.
I would be really concerned to ensure that the testing is there, because I'd be worried about leaching from the resin over time.
And that's a valid concern. One way that industry approaches leaching from plastics is that they pay a third party that conducts leaching testing on their products. One of the challenges, however, with the transformation of our pipes from metal to plastic when it comes to drinking water is that many of the chemicals that leach out of these plastics are not on the list of things that you actually look for. And so we need to put a little more effort into understanding what's happening as we transition from metal to plastic world.
Purdue University civil engineering professor Andrew Welton researching the effects of cured-in-place pipelining projects. Call in with your questions, your concerns about this approach to pipe repair. What have you have learned about it? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn what's in chemical plumes rising from sewer hole covers when repairs are underway using the cured-in-place pipe repair method. Call in with questions and thoughts, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Andrew Welton is a professor of civil engineering and environmental and ecological engineering at Purdue University. Andrew, the National Association of Sewer Service Companies, they've pushed back on your findings about cured-in-place piping, and they denounced your peer-reviewed study you led in 2017 that found it puts pollutants in the air, as we've been talking about. And the group later led a study that says your results were non-conclusive. How have these companies responded in years since?
So back in 2017, when we discovered that the emissions coming out of these manholes were not steam, we talked to many CIPP company owners and members of this organization called NASCO, and they were not aware that the materials posed an acute health risk and even long-term health risk to their own workers. Some of these workers were family members that worked for their companies that had been in these manholes and such. So there was a lot of concern and anxiety within these agencies and organizations, and that prompted organizations to lash out and put a whole bunch of misinformation out there into the industry, into the public space, which I attribute a lot of this to.
Have you responded with more research? What has been your pushback here?
Well, we are not pushing back. Because there's nothing to push back against. We were funded by the National Science Foundation, NSF.gov, the National Institutes of Health, Environmental Sciences, the Federal Highway Administration, the US EPA. Over the years, we have just been working to get answers for workers and the public and health officials to understand what to do about it and what the consequences are of exposure.
What regulatory body should be addressing these emissions?
So from a worker safety standpoint, OSHA is responsible, and even state OSHA agencies are responsible. Many of these agencies were not aware that this process was taking place in their states and in the country, and so they're trying to get up to speed. In the general public space, you know, children, people in their homes and schools, that is the US EPA's responsibility to regulate and oversee the protection of public health when it comes to chemicals and air. And then states are also responsible for protecting their own citizens against chemical exposures due to ambient air or indoor air. And many of these agencies were simply unaware that this was happening.
Have any of these agencies taken a lead on this or made it a priority?
So actually, last year, the Washington, D.C. Department of Energy and the Environment, or DOEE, which is a local air quality regulator for where people live in Washington, D.C., legally compelled a water utility to conduct air testing during their CIPP projects. And that is, to my knowledge, the first time this has ever happened. That was done so out of concern that the water utility and the CIPP contractors couldn't accurately explain to the regulator what exactly the risks were associated with their technology.
Did they publish those findings?
That's ongoing, but one of the challenges is that the utility hired an industry-focused research team that had previously put out information that was inaccurate. So there's concern that it's potentially that there's no independence associated with that study.
You bring up the safety and harm of workers in doing this cured-in-place piping process. Are you aware of any class action lawsuits?
I am not aware of any class action lawsuits associated with this. Generally, what we've seen is workers settle with their companies and then sign non-disclosure agreements. And I know that firsthand because workers have called me right before they settled and told me some things.
Let's go to Tamara in Ashland. Hi, Tamara. What is your question?
Hello there. I'm wondering how cities get to choose who works on these pipelines. I was at my residence with my grandson and my son, and we have asthma. and suddenly we couldn't breathe and we're very sick. And outside our house, somebody was working on the sewer pipe. And they were not attending it was like this trailer over the sewer pipe, and the steam was bellowing everywhere. And my grandson and my son and I had to leave the area because we felt sick. And, you know, Ashland decided this was the best way to approach this. And I'm wondering what I can do, you know, to influence that decision making, or how to protect myself when they're doing this work.
Tamara, thank you for bringing that personal story. Andrew.
So, Tamara, I'm sorry that that happened to you and your family. It shouldn't have happened. The way that you can protect yourself, first of all, is having a utility that's responsible, that recognizes the risk that the plastic manufacturing waste poses to its people. So there are ways that you can specify in the contracts that the waste is captured or certain technologies are avoided, and certain resins are avoided. As far as using that technology, if it's used, you'll often hear contractors say, pour water in your plumbing traps, but that doesn't always work because the emissions can waft across your property, through your windows, cracks and doors, and such like that. So really what we recommend people to do is evacuate their building if they are very concerned about it, especially if they have immunocompromised populations. And then also if there are any health impacts and such, contractors and utilities like you to go to them to contain the information. And the fact of the matter is neither of them have medical training. And so you really should go to a public health official or a medical doctor for medical and exposure advice, not the people who just want to fix a pipe and kind of move on.
Andrew Welton with us, a professor and director of the Healthy Plumbing Consortium at Purdue University, as we explore the cured in place pipelining process. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. You know, Tamara mentions trying to understand or get at the root of this before it actually happens and it's outside your door and happening. You know, President Biden has this infrastructure law, historic infrastructure law, supposed to provide funds to rehab and replace aging infrastructure. How can communities be sure their sewer lines are updated safely when the money is there?
So the new infrastructure money coming down from the federal government to different states will undoubtedly increase the number of CIPP projects in communities nationwide. And the way that that can be positively influenced to protect people from harm so that their pipes can be fixed in an economical way is that state agencies that are responsible for handing out that money require that these municipalities have certain controls in place if they use CIPP technology. So municipalities have to go to the state to obtain low interest loans. And as part of that, you can insert conditions that require certain actions in those loan applications. That's one way that the state can better protect people across Wisconsin and elsewhere in the country.
Turning to how to keep yourself safe, you mentioned evacuate. For how long? How is there any knowledge of how long these chemicals stay in the air?
So generally, people say that the chemicals stay in the air for hours to a couple days if they do enter and there's no way for the chemicals to get out. We have encountered several situations where contractors leached out actually raw resin inside the sewer line, which didn't cook, and therefore it simply off-gassed and vapors went up for months, people's sewer laterals. So there's a number of different situations where you may have just a couple hours the chemical exposures occur, or it could occur longer. That's why people need to engage their health officials, their public health officials, because those people can advocate on their behalf.
So if that pipe doesn't cure or cook properly, does that mean they have to redo the process, or how do you fix that?
Well, that's a great question. Sometimes contractors come back and just run water down it to try to flush out the uncooked resin. Sometimes there's another pass at the cooking process. And sometimes they'll go in and they'll cut a hole in the pipe to kind of suck out any uncooked resin and then patch it and fix it.
Andrew, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Andrew Welton is a professor of civil engineering and environmental and ecological engineering at Purdue University. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.